Next Step number 629, June 25th, 2020.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries welcoming you to the Next Step with Father Vazgen. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. There's no need to check your brain in at the door. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. These podcasts are part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes Ministry and provided by epostle.net, apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Well, how silly is it? How silly is it? It really depends on your perspective, doesn't it? Depends who you are, how you're looking at it. You call something silly. You say, that's silly. Why is it silly? It's silly to you. It's a perspective. It's a relative issue, isn't it? Today marks the 70th anniversary of the beginning of the Korean War. The Korean War 70 years ago began today, and today they celebrated it. They celebrated the beginning. I guess if it had been won, you celebrate the ending of it, right? But to celebrate the beginning, and well, yeah, obviously it hasn't been won. I mean, you've got a Korea that's divided into North and South, and the people who live there are the same, ethnically same people, right? They're Koreans. They live over there in Korea, and they're separated along a political boundary. Yeah, that's all. Well, I guess all boundaries are political, aren't they? But this one we became familiar with just last year, was it? Or the year before when President Trump went over and the North Korean president walked over and we became familiar with it as they walked over this line and a demilitarized zone and they shook hands and we said, wow, that's the line that separates North and South Korea. Same people, and you say, wow, that's kind of silly. You're the same identical people. You speak the same language. You have the same DNA. And we have North Korea, South Korea. You say, that's silly. You're looking at it from here. Of course, if you're in the middle of that, if you're a family who has people on the other side, if you've been separated, if you're looking for freedom and you can't find it, if you're looking for work and you're right in there because of the politics, and then all of a sudden somebody comes along and says, silly, it's certainly not silly. It's very real. Hey, you know what? I'm going to get very up close and personal in a couple of moments because I'll tell you something that is very, very silly. I want you to think about that North Korean example because I'll match it even better than that, okay? But there are certain things that you just say are silly. For right now, look at what's going on right now in the United States of America. We have Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter. Well, you know, somebody could look at that and say that, hey, that's kind of silly. Of course Black Lives Matter. I mean, you've had a black president. Of course Black Lives Matter. The head of the armed forces, Colin Powell, he was a black man, head of the entire armed forces, right? You look at that and you say, wow, what do you mean, black lives? Of course they matter and it's silly. And you look at it and you say it's silly until you're right in the middle of it. And then you've got somebody who says, hey, well, you know, I'm black and I walk down the street and I get stopped. And we're seeing more and more of these little videos popping up, you know, of guys walking through a mall wearing a hoodie and being pulled down by police. And the only reason is because they're black. And at that point, you realize that, okay, it may seem silly, but it's not if you're right in the middle of it. I mean, right now we have this horrible situation. People are out there bringing down monuments, bringing down statues. I was disturbed, offended, because the statue of Father Una Parasera, I believe he's a saint of the Catholic Church. I believe he is, yeah. Saint, Junipero, was not only taken down, but it was dismantled, it was kicked, and people yelling obscenities. And, you know, it's like, I've been through this in the Army, and your church people yelling obscenity. People don't even go to church. You don't even understand what's going on. And, you know, yelling about leadership and things like that. Same thing with this, Junipero Serra. I was there in the Bay Area. I was living in the Bay Area just right after that monument went up. It's a big statue. And I believe the freeway, if I remember right, the freeway was named after him. And right on the freeway, there was this huge statue, apparently. They brought it down last week. Why? Because Junipero Serra had converted the Native Americans to Catholicism. And the means by which that was done was wrong, and, you know, imperialism and so on and so on. There's a whole bunch of things. And we're seeing that in the Confederacy, too. People are going up into the Confederate monuments, and they're tearing them down. Why? Because the Confederacy was a symbol. There was slavery. And so today, for them to honor the Confederate soldiers, leaders, you're honoring people who advocated for slavery. And, you know, each of these times are different, and things are moving in different ways, and people will look at it and they say, that's silly, or they'll say that, yeah, I'm right in the middle of it, and I feel it. You know, I always try to put my feet in the shoes of others. I feel like, yeah, if they had constructed a monument to Talat Pasha, the man who orchestrated the 1915 genocide against the Armenians, how would I feel? Well, you know, we got to ask those Armenians that are living in Turkey, who are living in a town called Talat, or living near a statue of Talat Pasha. How do you feel about it? Well, obviously different than the way I would look at it. And certainly there's a lot of people who will look at that and say, that's silly too. Now, you know what's interesting? I was speaking to my brother last weekend, and we were talking. He just gave me this incredible insight and analogy. He said, instead of them tearing down these statues, why not educate people? Like, what about putting up a plaque? What about telling people why that statue is there? What that time was about, and how we got over slavery, and that these were people who fought against the United States of America. In other words, use it as an opportunity. And I didn't really, it didn't click into me until he gave me this example. He said, how would you feel if, you know, if the Germans today said, well, we're going to just cement over Auschwitz. It was a horrible day in our history, and let's just get rid of Auschwitz because, you know, we don't believe in that, and it was an awful thing, and we don't believe in Nazis, and it's over. And so let's just cement over it. And he's absolutely right. You know, you wouldn't do that. You can't do that. It was a chapter in history. So keep it and let it be a reminder for people of what can be done, of how horrible the human spirit can become if the checks and balances are gone, which is a whole different issue too. You know, let me say that too. I'm very disturbed because here in the United States of America right now, not only these issues are coming up, but the checks and balances are going. You know, the Constitution of the United States gives an opportunity for checks and balances. In other words, you are checked. You are the executive branch. You're the president of the United States. Well, you're not a king. You're not a monarchy. You are a president that is checked and balanced by the legislative branch, by the judicial branch, and vice versa. You're in the judicial branch and you have legislators, you have the executive branch, checks and balances. Well, we're losing that. We're losing that right now. And there is what's called the Fourth Estate. There's called the press. The media, the press was very important at one time, where things they would bring to light what you never would expect. Investigative journalism. Now it's like everyone's pitted against each other, and the president makes a mockery of the press. the press calls him on certain things. He says, no, you're wrong, you're lying, you're fake, and everything. This began right at the beginning. I don't know. You know, I've been really thinking about it. What have we gone through this past three and a half years? I mean, it began the first day of his presidency. There was a sizable number of people at his inauguration, and he won. What was the thing? He won the popular vote? He won the Electoral College. He didn't win the popular vote, right? But still, there was a lot of people at the inauguration. Well, he pushed it and he said, this is the biggest inauguration that there ever has been. Most people, and the press called him on it. You know, they called him. They says, no, this other inauguration, there were so many others that were more people than that. And he just pushed it and pushed it and pushed it and was forced and crammed down our throat that this was the biggest thing. And we got an amusement out of it until now. Here we are 3.5 years later, where you're looking at the press and you're calling it names. And the press really has lost a lot of credibility too, because there are so many other platforms by which people are expressing themselves. Basically, anybody with a small little cell phone and their little finger and thumbs can type out something and place it on a huge platform, on a huge, huge platform, and express it and get away with presenting it as news. And so you don't know what's what. And this is what I'm talking about, that silliness factor. Is it silly? Is it not? Where are you at? And where are the checks and balances in this to check? Does it really matter? Does it really matter to so many people? I keep thinking back on the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change. And I think about this many times when I see people arguing and arguing, like really taking on positions as if by placing a little blurb on Facebook, you're going to change the world. It's an ego thing. You want to show people that, hey, I'm aligned with this person, I'm not aligned. You're not changing people's mind. You're not changing people's mind in the least. You're just showing who you are. But, you know, we have to do this, we have to do... Well, what's happening is it's deteriorating the credibility of news sources, you know? And so we're in this unique situation right now. So people look at it and they say, oh, that's silly. And others will argue with you and say, no, it's not. Walk a mile in my shoes and you'll see it's not silly. And I said, I'm going to get a little bit personal with this too. I'll tell you about my experience. This is a silly, silly situation here in the United States of America and in a few other hot spots. Yeah, in Canada too, right? And let's say in North America and a few other little hotspots, there are two primates, two leaders of the Armenian Church. Impossible. Yes, it is impossible. It's canonically incorrect. Canonically. In other words, the canons of the Holy Church forbid it. And this is back during the times of communism. The Armenian political party found that they could, well, they had a natural platform in the church. Imagine if you've got 50 churches and you could somehow get the message out and you can get the wording done, you can get that same message being spoken. And what they did is they took over many of the parishes of the diocese of Etchmiadzin. So Etchmiadzin, back in the time of Harimyan Haidig, established the diocese. It means a group of churches here in the United States of America. The Venerable Patriarch, Harimyan Haidig. Well, when communism hit, some of the political parties went into action. You know, of course, communism and Armenia over there, we need an independent Catholicos. And so at that time, there were two Catholicoses. Throughout history, there have been Catholicoi in the Armenian Church. I mean, at the end of the 19th century, there was a Catholicos at Ahtamar, while there was one in Sis and one in Etchmiadzin. So there's been precedents, I mean, different conditions. So they go to the one in Sis. Now, Sis had been finished. This is what we call the Cilician Sea. This had been finished during the genocide, and so they moved it over to Beirut in a place called Antilias. And there they took the Catholicos. And so the political party said, hey, let's go in and we can now have a platform. And it has nothing to do with church. Nothing at all. This is the silly factor that I'm throwing in. It has absolutely nothing to do. It's silly. Yeah, you come and take it over. So what happened during communism? You had what was called the Cold War between East and West, and you had the Cold War within the Armenian Church too. Silly. We all had the same DNA. We all belong to the same faith. We all confess the same faith, but they were divided. They were divided. Well, what happens is after there is the fall of communism, 1990s, after the Catholicos from Cilicia moves to Echmiadzin in 1995, is elected and consecrated, there is an opportunity to unify, this church. But no, because why? It's not about Christianity. No, it's about politics. And no, it doesn't get unified. No, it still stays split. Silly. Yeah. Same people, same faith, identical. Same bishops, same priests who take the same oath, the same, I'll even go one step more. The Muron, the holy Muron was united back in 1991 when the two Catholicoi came together and brought the Muron together and put it together. So the children of the church consecrated wear the same Muron. No, but the Cilician Sea said, no. Not time for unity. Well, if not, then when? Come on. And here's the sad part about it. I'll tell you, it seems silly. But I'll tell you why it's not silly. It's canonically incorrect. It's canonically wrong. And therefore, every child who is baptized in the font of this uncanonical church, every priest who takes a vow, every order that is given through the bishops of that church is invalid. Yeah, it is. Now you're saying, oh, you're being a stickler and who believes it? Well, yeah, that's exactly the point. There are people who are going to say that's silly. Yeah, you're free to believe, but it's wrong. You can call it silly all you want, but there are people who are right in it. One of my deacons right now was there the day at St. James Armenian Church in Los Angeles when the priest was called. It was actually Holy Cross at that time, later became St. James. The priest, by the venerable patriarch Shnor Kalustyan, the bishop of California at that time. Yeah, the diocese was called the Diocese of California before Western. And a bishop there, he called the priest while my deacon, Dr. Dekmejan, was vesting him and was telling him that the churches were being taken over. Yeah, no, not by church, by political parties. And they were there. Now you tell them that that's silly. And my grandfather was on the board of trustees, or what now is called parish council, at Holy Cross in Los Angeles. And they were taken over. Same thing happened in Fresno. And right now, if you go up to somebody and you say, like, okay, where are you going to get married? I'm going to go get married at this church. Well, do you know that that's non-canonical? That's silly. Okay, you want to believe it's silly, but there are people who take this seriously, just as people who do here in America with Black Lives Matter. You can say that that's silly. Of course, Black Lives Matter because we had a black president. But this guy who has to walk down the street and be harassed, it's not silly to him. Just like you can look at different stories throughout history, North and South Korea. That's silly. You're the same people. No, but it's a reality. It's the tragedy of war. It's the tragedy of the human spirit. And yeah, it's something we're living with. We're living with this injustice. And I'll tell you, it is really hurting us. Because as a church, where you need justice, you have to be striving for justice. When the leader of your church is telling you, I am the way, the truth, and the life, you can't divide that truth into two halves. And we've done it. We've successfully done it. I know. This is a small little area that we're looking at. When you look at what they've done through Christianity in the whole world, yeah, you say, wow. This is such a small little percentage of the entire thing. But it doesn't make it right, does it? Doesn't make it right. And it's a sick reality. It's a sad reality that we're dealing with. And as a priest, I deal with this how many times? I don't want to say every day, but when I was a parish priest, definitely. But, you know, throughout the year, people come, I want to get married at this church. I can't. I don't want to do it. Oh, you can't? No, it's not that I can't. Thank God that we as priests, we talk to each other. We know who we are. But to me, it's not legitimate. I can't walk in there with a clean heart, with an open heart, and say that, okay, you know, this is a church. This is a church that has been taken over by politics. Another deacon of mine who passed away just a couple of years ago, last year, actually, excuse me. Yeah. He was a member of the political party. And he would tell me stories that would make your blood boil, make your skin crawl, you know? Oh, of what they would do in as far as advancing the political agenda via the church. And he had had enough. And I'll tell you something, I did his funeral. I should say I was honored to do his funeral. He was an incredible man. He was not only my deacon, he was my very close friend, one that I'd done a lot of work with him together over the last 20 years, including in Armenia, very close friend. And when it came time for his funeral, the leaders of the political party acknowledged he was a member of the political party. But when it came down to his faith, he didn't see it outside of Etchmiadzin. He understood that Etchmiadzin was the mother sea. And that was a realization that he came to after the fall of communism. He said, okay, communism's now gone. If you're claiming that the reason why we're split is communism and now there's no communism, why are you still there? Obviously, you could care less about communism. You could care less about Christ. And you care about your own personal desires and needs. And he told me this many, many times. We talked about it. We discussed it. And I saw it, you know, pan out at his funeral. He was truly a brave man, a man of courage, because he actually believed and he followed his belief, despite what his friends had told him. And there was a lot that you could learn from people of principle and people of character. Today, yeah, you look at it and you say, that's silly. I'll go to the church that I want to. Okay, that's fine. Do what you want. Do what you want. That's the motto that we have, and you live by it, right? And I'm going to tell you that for me, it's just unacceptable. It's unacceptable because it is silly that we're all part of the same, and they've created this division. And people celebrate that division by keeping the church going. Just like they celebrate the division of South and North Korea, because you keep it going. Just like you celebrate what's happening in the world because you keep it going. It's time to end the celebration for nonsensical things that bring division and misery to so many people. I think that's what's happening here in America. People are realizing there's a lot of misery. And the healing power that we need of the gospel is missing from the expressions, because everyone's trying to solve it on political grounds, and the power of the gospel is being forgotten. I'll tell you about that coming up in a few minutes, okay? Right now, we're going to take a break. I think it left you with a lot of heavy-duty stuff, some personal stuff, too. So let's take a break right now, listen to something. I'm picking this out because today I really felt like all day today I was thinking about this idea of truth, reconciliation. I was going to play you some jazz. Actually, I was going to go to John Coltrane because I had to kind of like a mystical experience recently. I connected peripherally with the teacher who turned me on to John Coltrane. Yeah, I haven't made the contact yet, but I discovered him. He's still around. There's a creative writing class that I took in college and met the guy who turned me on to John Coltrane. And I've been thinking about him and was going to play the music. And then I said, you know what? Before I do that, Datevik. I haven't heard Datevik in a long time. So I opened up a Datevik CD and I found my favorite things. Here's Datevik.
Kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. Cream-colored ponies and crisp apple strudels, doorbells and sleigh bells and schnitzel with noodles, wild geese that fly with the moon on their wings. These are a few of my favorite. With blue satin sashes, snowflakes that stay on my nose and eyelashes, silver white winters and melt into spring. These are a few of my favorite things. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel. These are a few of my favorite things. Cream-colored ponies and crisp apple strudels, doorbells and sleigh bells and schnitzel wet noodles, wild geese that fly with the moon on their wings. These are a few of my favorite things. Girls in white dresses with blue satin sashes, snowflakes that stay on my nose and eyelashes, seal white wine winners and veil them to spring. These are a few of my favorite things. When
gave us a little of everything, right? That's Datevig doing My Favorite Things, of course. That is off of her Ballads from the Black Sea album. Came out several years ago and just delightful. Everything on there is just fantastic. Well, actually, anything that she produces is fantastic, but kind of like I was feeling for John Coltrane today, and then my head went to scat, and I just said, okay, you know what, Datevig kind of like satisfies a lot of needs, you know, not everything, but a lot of needs of the spirit. And it's been one of those days. It's actually been a few months of that need being necessarily fulfilled somehow. So Datevig, I will put a link on today's show notes. As I say always, do support the people who bring this beautiful art form to us and this music to us.
White houses and neat little rows contrasting against the sky. Tumble down black shacks over the tracks, children so hungry they could cry. Chrome, the steel, the metal dream, leaving the teepee to rot. The escapist young mind left behind, saving dimes for community pot. Better get straight.
Talking about silliness and the truth when truth isn't silly. I know this first part of today's show, it's long overdue. Here we are in our 13th year of broadcasting. I'm just bringing this up. And people have asked me along the way, like, are you ever going to address the issue of unity in the Armenian Church? And I never really cared to, because I honestly believe that it's not a question of knowing the facts. People know the facts. People know that it is non-canonical. It is against every canon in the world. People know what happened. People are there because of their old biases. It's just like, you know, like when you're talking about the Confederacy, people know it's wrong. But you have your own bias and you raise that flag. Yeah, you try to tell them it's wrong. Sure, this is what they're doing now in the country. But this is why I'm telling you, until we have a change of heart, whether it's inside the Armenians, whether it's inside of America, whether it's inside of the world, that's the bottom line. You have to change that heart. I know people are listening to this from other parts. You don't know how bad it is when we talk about other parts of the world you're listening to. And you don't know how bad it is when I talk about unity in the Armenian Church. And it's literally, we have the same faith and we're at different places. And people have asked me along the way, why aren't you talking about it? Why aren't you saying? Because people know the facts. You know the facts, what they are. You know about the political parties getting involved. And you know, when I say political parties, I shouldn't really pluralize it. It's one political party. Sure, there are other political parties that have aligned themselves with Etchmiadzin, but it's not like Etchmiadzin is controlled by a political party. It isn't. It's just truth. I've lived there, I've been there, and you know, there's certain alliances that people have, but there is no political party. I've never seen a directive in my files. Yes, you're free to come and look at them. never a directive from political party. But people want to claim that there is. And that's why I said you can't bring this up. Just like people will say that, hey, I'm not prejudiced. I am prejudiced. Well, you're not going to prove it. And the day that you're going to have peace is when you have people who have a change of heart. When you start understanding that we are all God's children, that's when you understand that it's important to be colorblind. I talked about this quite a bit last week. In fact, last 12 years we've been talking about it. And I want to bring you to another point today, that another big item in my personal life was over this weekend, was when we saw the Armenian translation of the letter from Birmingham jail. I know a lot of you have heard me talk about this in the past. In fact, the letter from Birmingham jail has been a text that we use at our Martin Luther King Jr. retreats several times. But this letter is priceless. And yes, definitely we'll have a link on today's show notes. But we had a young gentleman, let's see, his name is Kerem Magnesian, who translated it into Armenian. And I was so excited, because this letter from 1963 has been the basis for my ministry. And I've used it many, many times at youth retreats, at Martin Luther King retreats, just to pass along my vision for what we as an Armenian church can be, should be. Dr. King, in this letter from Birmingham jail, he's sitting there because he's been arrested. He was in the protests. He's been arrested. And he's writing to fellow clergymen, to brothers in Christ. And he's saying, basically, the bottom line on this long letter is, what would Christ do in the midst of this segregation? He says, you as a Christian have a moral obligation to fight for justice, to fight for truth. He writes, he says, I cannot sit idly by in Atlanta and not be concerned about what happens in Birmingham. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And he had these, I mean, you've got to read it. You know what? It's not a long read. Highly recommend it if you have just a couple hours. Put it aside and read this letter to understand what the church is, what the church is for Christ, and what the church should be for all of us. And I'm very happy that now it's available in Armenian. This young man, he translated in Armenian. He's a researcher at USC, a Chichen researcher. Actually, those of you who have followed our podcast probably remember Sarah Chichen was the one who gave us the wool, and she's endowed a chair over at USC, and this is the researcher there, and he has translated this incredible letter. And now I'm excited, because now there's an opportunity for new hearts to be opened, for new hearts to understand the power of nonviolent resistance against evil, against injustice, against racism. You can't fight evil with more evil. You've got to, at some point, understand that good is more powerful than evil. And I've shared that with you through the years, and now there's an opportunity for this message to get out there in Armenian. So, I'm very, very excited. I'm very hopeful. But getting back to the question, people said, how come you've never talked about the split in the Armenian church? Because you're not going to change people's minds by arguing, by presenting facts. You're going to only change them when you could change the heart. And that's what Dr. King did. Dr. King got us to understand that we are children of God, all of us. That's his power. And I'm very disappointed that in the midst of what's going on regarding race relations today in America, his name is not being thrown around as it should be. It's the moment right now that it can be, because he does have a message that I speak that speaks to the heart, that goes beyond the color divides, and it does speak to the heart. Does that sound familiar? Isn't that what Jesus spoke to? Isn't that what Jesus spoke to? Seriously. I mean, that's, I think, the power of Dr. King's words. It's the Christian message. I want to just share with you a small little reading from the letter from Birmingham Jail. And again, I'll put a link on today's show notes. Do read the entire thing. But he's talking about like how he's sitting there in jail and how some of the clergymen might look at him and kind of say, oh man, you're a clergyman. Why are you in jail? Why are you opposing the government, the authority of the government, the police and everything? He says, I was initially disappointed at being categorized as an extremist. As I continue to think about the matter, I gradually gained a measure of satisfaction from the label. So people had accused him of being an extremist. Why are you in jail? You're a clergyman. You're a priest. What are you talking about? This is like, you know, it's one of those things that priests, it's this heavy baggage that comes with priesthood that you cannot go against anything. You have to be this neutral cream, so to speak. That if there's coffee, you have to be the cream in there to bring the neutrality into it. No. They were calling him an extremist. And he was upset by this until this moment. Listen what he says. I was initially disappointed at being categorized as an extremist. As I continued to think about the matter, I gradually gained a measure of satisfaction from the label. Was not Jesus an extremist for love? Wow. What do you mean extremist for love? Come on. That's a little bit, yeah, no. What do you mean he was an extremist? Wait. Read it. Was not Jesus an extremist for love? Love your enemies. Bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. Boy, if there's a definition for extremist, certainly Jesus fits into it after saying something like that. Extremist? Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you? No way. No way. Yeah, it is extreme. He continues, was not Amos an extremist for justice? Quoting, let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Was not Paul an extremist for Christian gospel? Again, quoting from Paul, I bear in my body the marks of the Lord Jesus. Was not Martin Luther an extremist? Quoting Martin Luther, here I stand, I cannot do otherwise, so help me God. And John Bunyan, I will stay in jail to the end of my days before I make a butchery of my conscience. And Abraham Lincoln, this nation cannot survive half slave and half free. And Thomas Jefferson, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. So the question is not whether we will be extremists, but what kind of extremists we will be. Will we be extremists for hate or for love? Will we be extremists for the preservation of injustice or for the extension of justice? In that dramatic sense, on Calvary's Hill, three men were crucified. We must never forget that all three were crucified for the same crime, the crime of extremism. Two were extremists for immorality and thus fell below their environment. The other, Jesus Christ, was an extremist for love, truth, and goodness, and thereby rose above his environment. Perhaps the South, the nation, and the world are in dire need of creative extremists. I lose it every time I read these words. It's where the church should be. It's what the church is. It's what the church should be today in this world. Changing people's hearts, bringing the example of Jesus Christ as this nonviolent revolutionary who turned the tables over, not in the temple, but in the temples of the heart. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Letter from Birmingham Jail. I highly recommend it. I hope you will take my advice. Find some time. Read it, and I'd love to hear from you. Now available in Armenian. Of course, we will put the link on our show notes so you could check that out. And do send it to people who would like to read it in Armenian. I think it's a very powerful, powerful message. Anyway, speaking of message, a powerful lady. Here's Susie.
Hi, Susie here again, reminding you that the next step is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We invite you to check out our extensive archive about applied spirituality and Christianity for just about every life situation. You'll find past podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Blueberry, and of course at the In His Shoes website. We're proud to have these podcasts available to our worldwide audience, with listeners added daily. To become a partner of this ministry, please consider donating by pressing on the donate button on our website. Your monetary contributions goes to maintain and further this dynamic mission, bringing the message of Armadoxy into the lives of a waiting world. Let us know if you'd like to sponsor a series of podcasts by dropping us a note at feedback@epostle.net. That's epostle with an E, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World, .net. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you, all of you, for all of the wonderful support that you give us from throughout the world. Hey, if you haven't had a chance, do check out our prayer services. They're going on every evening, 7:30 Pacific time. And they are brought to you on the Western Diocese Facebook page. I happen to do the Sunday evening one. I'll be doing one more before July begins next week, when we will be turning it over to the young people. And July has been dedicated to the young people who will be celebrating these prayer services. So do check that out. I'll have a link on today's show notes. They're wonderful. Each one of them is so meditative. It gives you an opportunity to just sit with a priest, with a few people, and just contemplate the message of the day in prayer, in him. And I don't know, to me it's beautiful, and I'm just very thankful that I'm part of this and being able to put this together. We have a lot of things coming up. We're incredibly busy, day-to-day stuff that is going on, and when I say stuff, that's the stuff that goes on. There's a lot of ministry, and that's the thing that you support. And so on to Susie's message. If you are out there and hearing my voice right now, and you're blessed by this ministry, do support it. It's very important, because it is an opportunity for us to do things that otherwise don't get done, say things that otherwise don't get said. And I can't tell you enough how important the response that I get from you is. I love hearing from you, because it tells me that the message is not just going out there, but it's being picked up. It's changing people, and it's getting people to think. I'm not out there to change people's heads or any of your beliefs, but I'm getting you to think. That, to me, is the biggest compliment. Can you think about something for a few moments? Use that rational reasoning that God endows you with. Use that love that's in your heart to be able to touch people and to do some good in this world. That's the important standard by which we measure how good we're doing over here. So thank you very much. Listen, we're going to call it a day today. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. I want to invite you to join us on all the socials, and of course at the mothership, inhisshoes.org. And drop me a line at feedback@epostle.net. On behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Vazgen, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I'm trying to think, but nothing happens.